Hey everyone, welcome to Intimate Knowledge. I'm so happy we get to spend the next hour together. I'm Brooke Burke.
I'm Megan King-Edmonds.
And I'm sex and intimacy coach Leela DeVille.
We are so happy that we're getting tons of emails because we love hearing from you. So interesting to get all the feedback and to hear your curiosities. So we're just going to dive right into a question. Does that sound good, girls?
Yes, great questions, by the way.
I know, so many great
ones. Keep them coming. Mm-hmm.
And this one is from Anonymous, which I totally get because a lot of people are still not comfortable talking about sex. So that's why we're here. Yep. Sex and intimacy. So here we go. Here's the question. I did a report on sex toys for my sex ed class. I discovered in my research that the vibrators had animal names such as the rabbit because the toys were designed in China where sex toys were not allowed. Hmm. I also wanted to ask if I wanted to try and add more to the sexual experience besides my role playing, where is a good place to start and how do I bring it up?
Right. The rabbit thing is so interesting. Somebody else on my Instagram wrote me a note about that too.
We discussed it a couple of episodes ago
with Doc Johnson,
like the naming of them.
Oh, right,
and the rabbit,
right.
And
we
it's
did.
Like, yeah, so I didn't know that that came from China. Interesting.
And that famous scene from Sex and the City with the rabbit. Yeah. And if you remember, I shared that I never really was into that because the whole rodent connection for me killed the whole. I couldn't even like entertain that. But what do you think, Leela?
Let's talk about role playing because, you know, role playing is really about changing one's behavior and acting out something, playing out something. So assuming a character or a role. And there are so many ways to explore sexually that don't include that. So, you know, you can play with toys, already doing.
Tell us more about role playing, though. Like, could you make any suggestions for someone that might be wanting to try that and really doesn't know how to even start?
Suggestions. I've done that personally.
Would you ever
done role play? Yeah, for sure I would. Yeah.
Like kink and BDSM and
I'm thinking of like
meeting someone.
I don't know. I'm thinking of like sexy nurse role play. Like that's what I think of when I think of role playing. But
So it's kind of like amplifying that, right? And just going, well, I'm going to push this to the edges and I'm going to be the nurse and I'm
going
to, you know.
Right.
Or it could even be something as simple as being in a bar and waiting for your partner to show up, pretending that you don't know them and they show up. Like one of my girlfriends is really into this remote control vibrator. And it's really quite sexy. So you have the remote control and you give it to your partner so they can activate the vibrator. And it's not like vulgar. It's cute. There's all different kinds. Some of them are even like pink and they're rubber. And you put it in your panties. And then you give them the remote control, right?
Yeah.
And let's say, I think this was a movie too. This is probably not that creative. But you could be sitting at the bar, acting like you didn't know each other. He walks in. Maybe he's sitting down the bar next to you or whatever. And he has the control. I think that was
role-playing with toys.
Wasn't that in 50 Shades of Grey also, like a version of it?
I think she had Benoit balls, so she was wearing weighted balls, you know, it increases sensitivity, and when you move around, you can feel them.
But they're meant to be inside of you, and then you're contracting your...
Those are for the Kegel exercises,
they're great.
Right?
It can make, doing laundry really fun.
I've heard that. That is interesting.
My midwife told me about those, actually, for the pelvic floor.
To strengthen your pelvic floor.
And also, I really recommend it to women who have had vaginal births, who are trying to, reconnect with the vaginal canal and cessation there. Cool. So it can, really be useful for that.
I think it also helps with LBL, light bladder leakage, when you begin to strengthen the pelvic floor, which is deeper than a Kegel's. What are they called again, Leela?
What's that?
The balls. Weighted balls.
Oh, Benoit balls. Yeah, they're just weighted balls.
We'll have to link that on our page.
And the remote control vibrator, you can Google it and get it on Amazon. But that's kind of sexy, right? So you're giving up control. You're giving it to someone else. You also don't know when they're going to activate it. And you can be wearing it for that role playing or at a dinner or whatever. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's cool.
In a serious meeting. And all of a sudden, there's an earthquake.
I feel like that's a good piece of advice to start to try those Benoit balls.
Definitely.
I said it Benoit.
I know the way she says it is so sexy. But the other part of this question, because I do want you to get a chance to answer this, what's a good place to start and how do I bring it up in relation to sex
toys? Well,
she
doesn't want to do role play, right? So
she said besides that.
This one, women have, I think we've really forgotten as women what a powerful influence we have over sexual play. If this is something you desire, if you want to expand your sexual repertoire with your partner and you... I would just go straight for it and be very direct. I mean, it's vulnerable.
How? Get me specific.
I would really love to explore my sexuality. Can you help me do that?
And do you think it's
and
your responsibility?
And here's one way that I think that we can do it.
I like that. It's like talking dirty.
Do you think, though, that a woman should take charge and purchase the toys? Do you think it's a shared experience? Do you think you go online and order it? Do you expect to your partner to do it? I mean, how much control do you want to... Are you suggesting that women take over exploring their own sexuality and getting to know their own bodies?
All of it. Full responsibility. 100%. Like I don't feel like it's up to our partners to evoke that. I love the idea of being inspired by our partner, but it's not their responsibility at all.
So you would just
if
direct
that's what you
communication.
Want, direct communication.
Bring it up.
This is what I want to explore.
It's so hard for so many women.
It is. I know, because it's vulnerable, right? What if you get it wrong? What if he's not into it too? You know, but it's like,
well, let's talk about getting it wrong, because I don't even know what that means. Let's just free everyone from the
killing
connotation of right or
energy.
Wrong. Killing like, can you really get it wrong?
No,
or is
you
it
can't.
Just a big freaking experiment?
It is an experiment, and being playful and curious, like, and being curious about your partner. That's what it's all about.
I think playful energy is so beautifully put in relation to intimacy mm-hmm. and sexual mm-hmm. union. Because that's
otherwise
where,
it gets boring.
Well, yeah, and that's where spontaneity yeah. and uncertainty and all of these things are birthed, where you have freedom and it's fun, and it doesn't always have to be this vulgar, aggressive, you know, dark turn into, you know, Kinkville. Being playful. Mm-hmm.
Well, what about
is really
maybe
important.
Another way to like explore your sexual experience without role play is like power dynamics, but not pretend. Like just feeling how much can I surrender to this other person who is servicing mm-hmm. me.
It's one way to put it.
Are you speaking from a female perspective or both roles when you said switching
both.
It?
Both. Switch it up. What mm-hmm. if you want to explore deep surrender and to be deeply taken, then lean into that and guide your partner there. Like
literally.
The other day with my partner, he was like being really beautiful and in sensual play with me, but I wanted something else. And so I led it there and he just got the cues.
Did you lead it there with your body or verbally?
With my body. I communicate a lot around my mm-hmm. pleasure through my body rather than verbally.
What's amazing about you is you know what you want and where you want to go. And I think a lot of people are not dialed into their own mm-hmm. body to understand that a taking a turn in a sensual experience might improve it. They sort of are, I think, in our generation, women are still accepting where they're at and what they're getting and are even okay
yeah.
without achieving optimal pleasure. And I know we're all in agreement here in
about
this podcast
about pleasing.
It's not even about the orgasm or the end result or the end game. But a lot of women are just simply satisfied with serving.
Okay, you know what? I want to give a piece of advice to Anonymous for a way to add more to the sexual experience, because if she doesn't want to be so forward, I think a good, easier way to explore what you might not know you want is just by having sex in different places in your home, not always your bed. And I think by doing that, you know, it could be like, could turn out to be kinky, or it could yeah. turn out, you know, some kind of different position that you're not used to and it turns out you like. I think that's just like, it's such an easy way to kind of figure out that path.
I like that.
Yeah, we get that question a lot around, oh, how do I invite more sexual positions into my bedroom? And it's like, yeah, get it out of the bedroom.
But that also shows yeah. us that also shows us that people don't know where to start, right? So
definitely.
They're tuning in and they're mm-hmm. listening for ideas and for suggestions, and they're appreciating our different points of view. But a lot of people just don't know how to start, let alone how to ask for it.
Totally
so,
okay.
Start with your own pleasure.
Yeah.
That is the only place to start, because then it will be authentic and then it will represent you and not just being a reflection of what your partner wants and his desires or her desires. It's actually your pleasure, and then what rolls out from that will be totally informed by your authentic pleasure. So start there. Self-pleasuring is like really underrated.
So while we're on the topic of pleasure, we're going to do something a little different this episode, and we're going to bring in a man. Eric Amaranth is joining us today, and he is a sex life coach, and I'm really curious to understand more about exactly what that is. He specializes in enhancement of women's and men's basic to advanced sex skills. I mean, girls, can you imagine if we could develop our sex skills, or if we were with someone who had like you know, an educated repertoire of sex skills. I don't know what that
the
means.
The best sex skill is the ability to listen. The best lovers are the ones who listen, right? Mm. Listen to themselves, listen to their bodies, listen to their partners.
I'm excited listening. To get a male point of view on this.
Yeah, me too.
And listening to your own bodies. I mean, that's where it all begins, right? Anyway, he's here. I'm excited. And let's dive right in.
Hi, Eric. This is Leela.
Hi, Leela.
Hi, Eric. This is Megan. Thanks for being with us.
And I'm Brooke. Hi, Eric. We're so excited to have you. I was loving your bio and excited to start talking about skills. Hopefully, we're going to learn a lot in the next 30 minutes, ladies.
It's good because there's needs to be a drive for more skills on both sides of the sex map, not just the women's side, which is what we traditionally get.
Did you say sex map?
Yeah, like which guy, you know, which side, men or women's doing what?
So, Eric, can you kind of give us a little bit of background on who you are and what you do?
I am a sex life coach, is the term I coined when my mentor, Betty Dodson, she coined the term sex coach. And I liked sex life coach because it was a little softer, because I'm a guy, it needs to come across a little differently. A woman can do different things than a man can in this particular profession. And I was with Betty. Well, she's been, you know, teaching women and couples since the late 60s, early 70s, on into maybe mid 70s. And then I studied with her for 10 years. And then I went out on my own.
Well, this is so interesting. So you say you studied under Betty. So how do you study to be a sex coach under Betty? And I'm asking this, I'm sitting next to Leela, and she is also a sex coach. But I think I still have so many questions about, you know, how do you get to this place? Even though Leela has told me her story so many times, I would love to hear kind of your journey as well.
Yeah, it is so unique.
So it is. Mm-hmm.
So mine was really unique. I don't know if you could, I guess you could probably duplicate it if you did Tantra. They probably did, you know, things along the lines that me and Betty did. But Betty and I were, we had a lot of hats we wore. She was my boss. She was a mentor. We were also in a relationship. We all just kind of said, F it, and said, you know, we're going to do what we want to do.
Do you mind if I ask if Betty had an opportunity to dive into medicinal infused experimentation when she was guiding couples in the 60s through the 80s? Because that's the first thing that came to my mind, you know, when we think about, you know, the history of ecstasy and MDMA. And I mean, if that's appropriate for the sake of our podcast, I think so. I think it's kind of fascinating.
She, as far as I know, she would play around with marijuana, but she never taught anyone, you know, do this to make this better with this particular drug, as far as I know. It was always strictly, what can we do with the body? If you want to add some herbs, then that's up to you, that kind of thing.
Mm. So what's the philosophy? I mean, if we're going to stray from psychology and sort of traditional sex ed, what are your thoughts on how to create deeper intimacy and fulfillment and pleasure and connection?
Well, those are all separate topics.
Agreed.
Are they? Are they really, though? I mean, really, let's talk about that, because don't you feel like sort of the mind and the soul and the body and all things sort of gel when you have real, true, deep into? I mean, I think so. If I was thinking about intimacy, I think it's physical and emotional and mental, if you're lucky. Maybe, well, maybe more body space than head space, but
unless we're talking about sex, I guess.
True, 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 true. Yeah, let's talk about that.
We have a body, and we have a circulatory system, you know, a nervous system, a digestive system. It's all in the same body, but they technically do different things. That's what I mean.
Okay. That makes sense. Like,
so, for example, for intimacy, my direction has always been for people to, and Betty taught me this, and this is definitely not a traditionalist view of relationships. She would rather people have sex or have some form, doesn't have to be intercourse, but some form of sexual intimacy or connection first before you start going down the falling in love bit, because it'll tell you how compatible you are in that regard, at least to start with, because how many people have gotten done the love thing and then they jump into bed finally and somebody has a lot to learn, egos get banged up, and then now you think, well, maybe I wouldn't have gotten involved with this person if I'd have known about this beforehand. So it's the pure chemistry,
you mean?
What's that?
The pure chemistry, you mean? If the chemistry isn't there and you're already falling in love, you mean the chemical compatibility?
Well, it's that. Because I remember I was with a lover, a temporary lover, who said, you're awesome in bed, but I just can't stand the way you smell. Ooh, you know?
Pheromones, that's important. Well, so that's right. A deal breaker.
Well, so Eric, yeah. Do you ascribe to this way of thinking as far as, you know, have sex first and then see if you're compatible, or, you know, move on to the emotional component after that?
It's to some, and I said some, I not have sex, some form of sexual
okay.
connection.
All right. Well, that, yes.
Well, I think that's, yeah. This is really interesting because we are sort of, you know, we're sort of trained to think that things should go in the other direction, you
absolutely.
Know, in the other order. And as soon as we start to let go of all those preconceived rules and notions is when we start to self-discover, right? But I think that's really interesting. I sort of agree with the chemistry and the chemical and the pheromone and all those little things, whether it's, you know, the bits, the parts, the smells, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Is legit. But then again, when you have a deeper emotional connection, I think as a woman, you sort of develop your groove and your rhythm in sexual connection, and not just sex, I mean whatever it is that turns you on. So I don't know, this is really controversial but interesting.
Yeah, I don't think there's any one way that people can build that intimacy and connection and those kind of experiences. It's really like coming needs to come from impulse. So like if you are naturally more inclined to have physical connection first and then build from that, then I think yes, absolutely follow that instinct and dive deep into that. And if it's the other way around, then I think everyone should.
Yes, I agree too. I mean, but Eric, the thing is that kind of order is not socially acceptable per se. Can you imagine the show The Bachelor if they started with the honeymoon suites first and then backed up from there? I mean, that would be on
that'd
a different channel.
That'd be a great show. No.
Well, Peter might be into that.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
He might be dipping in there.
I don't know. I mean, I've had both types of relationships that started out, you know, in bed and developed into other things, and then other the relationships where delayed gratification was intentional and effective. But this is fascinating, Eric, because I have been in relationships where we were just never going to get there sexually. And I was really into the human being, the character, yeah. The all of it. But quite
that's
honestly,
darling.
I know he was never going to blow my mind in bed. So where were we really going to go in a committed relationship? So
that sounds so disappointing.
And people don't really say that or admit that. No. They're like, oh, we're supposed to be so deep and just be a bigger part. No. And by the way, the other way around too, where I've had, you know, firework sex in a relationship. And I literally, the dialogue was, I think we need to get out of bed like eventually. Mm-hmm. And this really isn't going to go anywhere. Right?
Right. But there's a big line in the sand called marriage.
Why is that a line in the sand?
Because it's very good to know whether you have chemistry as far as like, you know what, I just don't like the way you smell before you marry the person.
Before you marry the person? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need to be intimate to notice how someone smells.
No.
Well, what kind of smells are we talking about here?
That's true.
Right.
I mean,
like we're registering these things as soon as we meet someone, I think. I think so. I know that I am, and you can, the compatibility and stuff, you're registering as you meet someone. So, but what Eric is saying is that
pheromones.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but Eric, how does a woman jump on this bandwagon? Because I could see a man like wanting just like, be that masculine alpha male and own every, like if you tell a male, oh, have sex first and then figure out the emotional component.
Well, some form of sex, right?
He's okay, saying, get in, you know, like some form of sex, yeah.
Some things have a sexual experience.
Some form of touching each other.
What do you think, Eric?
Because, well, I look at, Betty and I looked at the world differently. It's like, what if women had the same or similar perspective on a drive for sexual pleasure as the men do? And the reason why we have that as men is A, testosterone, and B, our primary orgasm-inducing equipment. Like, we get that for free as part of how the deal generally works. Versus women's, you have to know what you're doing. It just doesn't happen, because babies wouldn't just happen unless ours kind of came for free. So we get this this is just the way things are for us, and it gives you a different perspective on reality. But what if a given woman had that same thing?
I think I have that thing, and I sort of agree with you, Eric, even though it might not sound proper. I've also been married for 19 years, so I haven't been exercising this new philosophy.
But not currently married.
I'm not currently married, and much later on in this series, I'll share the story of the man that I'm involved with right now and our relationship, maybe an edited version of it. But I kind of agree with what he's saying. It's like, if we can get over our ego and how we think we're supposed to behave, and if we're self-confident and comfortable with who we are and not worried about what mm-hmm. the world thinks or our mm-hmm. partner thinks, and we're getting our physical needs mm-hmm. met. I mean, this might sound really harsh, but for me, relationship between man and woman at this point in my life, it's not for a lot of other reasons outside of sensual connection mm-hmm. for me right now in my life. And I'm sort of owning that. So
I totally agree. I'm in kind of the same mindset of seeing sex, I guess, because I've achieved everything that I would want to achieve. I have my kids, I have my career, I don't need a man. So mm-hmm. I may as well get a little bit of pleasure from it. And in that puts me in an empowered place where, Eric, I can totally understand this advice that you're giving, and I can totally ascribe to that. However, I don't know if that's really the typical female mindset.
Well, you're asking a great question. How does a woman enter into that possibility of, is that the philosophy? Because I understand what you're saying. Like, mm-hmm. I'm looking at Megan's face right now, and we're like, well, that sounds all hot and great and free and everything, but how, you know, in our generation, does a woman ascribe to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can I give you some examples?
Please, that's what we want.
So I'm not going to give you, you know, like, I'm not going to use juicy wording, you know, to go over any line.
Oh, please do. Oh, please don't edit.
Right.
You didn't. Last episode was all about getting comfortable in our skin and talking dirty, so please be juicy.
Okay. All right. So I had my wife had a friend who was going through the same thing. We're like, you know, I don't want to have sex, even if I want this guy, and I'm definitely a go on a visual and all that preliminary stuff. You know, what if I don't want to do that? What if I want to just give it more time and go wait to the fourth date, or, you know, et cetera? And I said, well, how about this? How about once you get to that moment where it's definitely like, oh God, we both want to do it, then do something smaller. Like, for example, like sex with your boobs, something that's STD safe, you know, don't eat any condoms. But on your side, you know, he has to be able to, or it'd be nice if he had some skill sets to reciprocate on your side of the equation. And you'll also get to see if he has any skill sets to reciprocate. Mm. Okay. So both sides get to play with a little something.
I think I would be more uncomfortable with somebody having sex with my boobs than my vagina the first time. To be completely honest.
I agree, actually.
You do?
Actually. I mean, we're sitting in here. And,
I mean, it's definitely
totally female,
like,
room right
it's
now.
It's not as STD safe, but it kind of sounds like, I don't know. It's a bit
more vulgar, maybe.
How do you say, no, I don't really want to have sex with my vagina, but the boobs are fine.
Well, then you can do manual hands.
Okay. Well, yeah.
What was the reason for your friend's, did you say wife or girlfriend? I'm sorry. What was her reason for wanting to withhold from sex for a period of time? Was it an experiment
Well, it was only 4 dates. Right?
Whatever it was, I was just curious why someone would deliberately want to do that. I mean, most people, have that inner dialogue. I'm just curious why.
Yeah, why do you think so, Eric?
I don't know exactly, you know, because I'm not a psychologist. I didn't say, well, what's your motivation? Mm-hmm. You know, that wasn't it. And she said, this is how I think. And what do you think? What should I do? So I'm not absolutely sure. Okay. But
I was just curious because I think motivation has a lot to do with it. You know, what's the reason for it? Are you delaying pleasure for a certain reason because you don't think that you're worthy? Or do you feel like you need to be more proper? Or do you think society says we're supposed to wait? Are you okay with just saying, you know what, I don't want to wait. I'm really connected and into this. And, you know, let's go for it. It's a deep conversation, mm-hmm. you know.
So one of the other things I like, I know I pulled out the boob sex things, but I'll take it back to the manual concept where I always tell clients to mix sex or sexual contact and massage, because if you ever watch any adult video, one of my most favorite kinds where I actually see the woman getting turned on and enjoying what's happening is these massage parlor-ish style videos, because they're getting some good quality touch to warm up with, for God's sake, to begin.
Warm up for what?
What's that?
No, we've had like lots of discussions between us around foreplay, and we really don't like the word foreplay because it's kind of like leaning into this idea that there's a main event.
Right.
And so we use the term core play because we think it should be the majority of the sexual experience, especially because, you know, maybe one out of four women can experience orgasm from penetration alone. So, yeah, we like to use the word core play because there is
no warming up. Period. Yeah,
so that's what I was asking, like, so leading to what, you know, like I feel like sensual massage can be the whole experience. It doesn't have mm-hmm. to like amount to penetration or even like driving towards orgasm.
Well, that's what you negotiate or talk about or decide upon as a couple mm-hmm. beforehand. In my world, I'd rather have things be clear than go down the mystery romance path where I don't know what's going to happen next. Well, that's a little iffy in my philosophy. I'd rather walk up to a woman that, you know, we're getting that we've had a long convo at the bar and say exactly what I want to do, than get vague and then leave her wondering, you know, and having questions, or me having questions on her side. That's my kung fu.
I like direct communication. I experienced that once, and I thought it was really forward, but it actually turned out to be a core part of our sexual relationship, and it was in the very beginning before we even got into bed, and he very directly asked me specifically about fantasies and turn-ons and that sort of, you know, sexual breaking point. And I was like, wow, I was almost a little bit uncomfortable. And then I had to dig a little deeper and try to figure it out. And it was a great conversation and, you know, an exploration conversation. And it was really helpful to know both sides. I thought that was, it was a one time only that I've experienced
that
with a man.
Did you feel comfortable enough to express what your intentions were and what you needed to feel safe and where you wanted it to go?
I felt comfortable, but I was also in a phase I was still discovering those things. And I also didn't want to really dictate where it was going. So I had a lot of different thoughts during the conversation. Well, if I say, like, this is my thing, is he going to think that's my go-to thing and that's what I want right now? Mm-hmm. That's where it's always so risky, right? And a bit totally. Complicated.
And I think that's why a lot of women hold back, is because mm-hmm. they want to feel safe. They want to feel reassured mm-hmm. and secure before they, like, go in there with, like, their full body, you know?
And yeah.
they want
to... and their full fantasies.
Yeah, which... and you have to also acknowledge that most women have a degree or a level of sexual trauma that they're healing from. And so the going slowly and knowing how someone's going to show up for you and hold space for you sexually is really important. So I think waiting to explore sexually it can be really healing and needed mm-hmm. and necessary.
And that's the thing with safety. We talk about safety, and I think we're talking about sexual safety. But from a woman's point of view, Eric, you know, walking up to a stranger at a bar and talking about, you know, what you would like to do with them sexually, like, that's all great and good and everything. But the fact of the matter remains that men are typically bigger and more powerful physically than women. And that can be a very scary thing. So as far as safety with our physical bodies and whether or not they can... are they going to be nice to us? Are they going to, you know, take us somewhere we don't want to go? I mean, that's a real thing. Rape is a real thing. So
yeah, and worse.
What's that?
And worse is a real thing.
Exactly. And worse. And so that's why from a, you know, a woman's point of view, we're so vulnerable and, you know, and those type of actual, you know, basic safety needs as well.
Yeah. You know, what I was just thinking, you know, as we're talking about that this specific topic, something that's so fascinating is that in our society, we want an element of certainty, yet we also want spontaneity. Mm-hmm. So it's like we want so many different things as a woman, you know, as a man, you know, in our sexual encounters. It's like, you know, we want freedom, yet we want commitment. We want certainty. We want, it's like a, it's such a double-edged sword in trying to define it.
It's like
it.
A drug.
That's why communication is so, so super important. I'm curious about how you help people and couples develop their relationship skills. And, you know, I also read, in, you know, in your bio, you're helping them develop breathtaking sexual techniques. How do you do that? Like, can you give some of our audience some tips or something that they can experiment with?
Yeah. The first thing I tell people is if you're, well, even if you're a single, an individual who's, you know, going to be doing things with someone you meet, you know, that's new, you got to be on the same team. And that means you're going to be able to create more elaborate sexual dishes if the two of you are both on board doing things than just one. And I know, I'm not saying that you always have to do it this way, because the, you know, the man, the traditional man taking over, doing all the stuff, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that at all. But it is undeniable that if she has a part of pleasuring herself while she's the primary recipient of the pleasure, then things can get a lot more like an orchestra of pleasure instead of just a solo instrument.
Mm-hmm. Great analogies. And,
right. Where you can create pleasures when you combine pleasure sources that blend together in your mind and physiology that by themselves, they just won't be. Mm-hmm. So I say to people, if you take some time to develop some skill sets, like learning how to massage a G-spot from 0 to 100, you know, like how does it go through changes, all the little knickknacks and detail to learn that. What are the knickknacks and detail for clitoral stimulation?
How does somebody learn how to do that and how to perfect their skill set sexually?
Well, I teach like it's, sometimes with toys or with my hands. Like I'll kind of, you know, raise my hand up and show different physical, you know, the different techniques, but I'll take them from, you know, step one to the end. And we can stop along the way and go into more details about each piece. So it's very much like getting a, like a yoga lesson or swing a golf club the right way. There's very specific ways, like in massage, you know, that people say like, well, you don't need that for sex. Like, oh yes, you do. Because if you ever had a really good massage, there's a reason why that person doing the massage to you makes it feel so good, because they know what they're doing based on skill sets they were taught.
That's a learned skill.
Yeah. I feel like the biggest skills, like the greatest skill you can learn, particularly as a woman, is how to occupy your own body and notice your own pleasure. So the more that you can explore your body and be submersed in your own pleasure and be able to give that to yourself, the more that you can then express that and be in that with your partner.
I agree with that.
There's a, you know, that's a big step. That's almost like sort of like a mental internal step. One of the things I have taught clients, who there's women who have such a strong habit pattern towards serving the male that he'll start doing something and she'll flip him over and then start doing something back to him. And he'll go, wait a minute.
And I was just going to ask you that in relation to female pleasing their partner, you know, be it female or female male, two totally different conversations. But are you able to share any experiences just for our audience? Like, you know, when you talk about a man really understanding all the parts and levels and waves of the G-spot, you know, a woman's like, wow, okay, I want to experience that. But is there anything in particular as a man on the receiving end that made you feel like, wow, this woman is really experienced, or she's mastered the skill set, or she's very educated with the male anatomy. I'm just curious. It's easy to talk about the female anatomy, but I think fewer women are really committed to giving pleasure and really understanding the male body, like all of it, from, you know, the penis to the prostate to like the whole thing. You know, if we're going to talk about it, let's like dive into it.
Right. So, but just like I, you know, sort of vaulted off of, like, when I was way back, I always had a strong erotic interest in doing wonderful things for real, not just in, you know, for pretend or what I think is real or making it all up for myself, like so many men do. Real stuff, you know, to her, up to that, creating that orgasm or being a part of the creation of that orgasm if we're both doing things. And the women that I've met who were that good with men had the same thing. They had a very strong erotic attachment to doing things to him to make him, you know, see colored lights and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's a big one. There's a lot of men out there who don't have that or don't have much of it. They're more self-based. I wouldn't say self-centered. I guess you could say that, but self-based. And that's their only perspective. And so I've worked with clients saying, well, how do we open that up in your mind? How do we do a different dance? There's nothing wrong with that dance. You can be the, like, raw alpha male, I shall, you know, gobble thee up. And that's, in the proper context, wonderful and good. But how about we have another dish we can do?
And would you agree that every single sexual experience with different partners is a relearning of how to make love to someone, of how to explore someone's body, an absolute relearning with a new individual?
Oh yeah. Because no matter how good I am, I will there's always going to be idiosyncrasies and differences with that person's neurology and what they find erotic. And that's why I keep telling people they have a hard time believing me until they experience it. I keep telling them, if you're with someone long enough and you're working on strengthening your sexual skill sets long enough, then the sex is going to get better. The sex I have with my wife now, and we've been together for 10 years, is better than it was the first 5 to 7 years.
Amazing.
And I say to her, I'm more attracted to you now than I was back then because you can do more stuff to me and with us.
Is that because you both of you continue to develop the skill or you change with each other? I mean, when we think about 7 to 10 years, which is a big question that we are often asked, how do you keep it alive? How do you keep it, you know, erotic in a long-term relationship? So are you both committed to peak pleasure, or how are you able to do that 10 years in?
Well, first of all, I think if you have this is like a tangent, but I feel like I have to say it. I think it's important if you're going to be with somebody long term that if you have a physical type, get it. Because it really makes it keeps your brain engaged on a visceral level, in my opinion. But so as far as, once that's covered, when you continue to invest in each other's pleasure and say, like, oh, wow, like, it just occurred to me during that, like, let's say sex is over with and you're pillow talking. You say, like, yeah, like, I did this new thing, like, and I saw that you went crazy for it, and it just occurred to me out of nowhere. And, you know, and your girlfriend or your husband is like, yeah, like, that's so amazing. And it just, stuff will come out of the ether, you know, from the creativity of it. And now you have something you had no idea, you know, that you could throw in for the past 2 or 3 or 4 years, and now it's here. So that is wonderful and can happen through a long-term relationship where you have the same, like playing the same instrument, and all of a sudden there's a new note. Or if you're working on, let's say, like I said before, like G-spot development or G-spot pleasure, you know, she can enjoy it to a certain extent, and then a year later it changes and now it's more powerful. But you're not going to get there unless you put that other time in before.
I really feel like that element of just discovering your partner as they are that day and what you're bringing to the table that day is probably the key to being an amazing lover, mm-hmm. is meeting your partner where they're at, meeting your own body where it's at, mm-hmm. that day, and seeing what optimally wants to unfold. So yes. Having that element of discovery and curiosity and playfulness is the thing that is going to keep it alive for the years to come, 10 years, 20 years in, is still being curious about your partner and your own body.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even the ability to dial inside and to tap in and really understand what's going on and accept changes and have the confidence to explore different needs and moments. But yeah, all true. Well, that's yeah.
Well, thank you so, great stuff. Thank you so much, Eric. It's been so interesting to get your perspective, especially from another sex life coach. We have Leela on the
and
show.
A male and one.
What's that?
And a male, and a male one.
Yes, a male one. Yes, thank you so much. And we appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks,
Eric.
Gosh, so many things came up for me during that conversation. I have to go back in a funny way. I didn't want to make light of what he was saying. So I want to just briefly touch on pheromones because I don't think he's going to mind me saying this, but the relationship that I'm in right now, I'm always teasing my boyfriend about his scent and his smell. And we have like
in
this
bad
thing.
Way?
No.
Oh, well, that's
we
good.
Have this thing with each other that's so personal and mm-hmm. so intimate, but I... Like, quite literally, like, I smell him, like, I miss his mm-hmm. smell when I'm not with him, like, I could wear, like, his dirty shirt and just enjoy mm-hmm. his scent, but even at night, like, I always tease him, I tell him that he smells like coconuts, aww, but he does,
good.
He does smell like coconuts, but it's like a, and it's not cologne, and it's not the deodorant, it's even the natural scent, mm-hmm. and he says the same thing to me, and I do think that that's so, so, so important, and you can love someone's huge. Fragrance, that's an add-on, but their actual body chemistry, I think it's primal, and it goes definitely. Way, way, way back into the animal kingdom, and I was thinking of one thing, because my mom used to say this to me all the time, where Eric was saying how if you like their smell or you don't like their smell, but I sort of feel like that's a seasonal thing that changes. Like my mom used to say to me when a relationship was going bad, she used to always ask me, baby, she'd say, how does he smell? And I used to be like, and
really?
I'm telling you, I would turn
absolutely.
On him.
Wow.
I would not be able to stomach
no way.
The fragrance of him. I, and it's not just one time. Like
I'm going to have to smell.
No, time. Seriously, like several times. And not like, not always, but I think
it
that
happens.
What turns wow. us on and what we respond
that's
to.
Fascinating. We're all animals.
Mm-hmm. What we respond to from a primal point of view. Mm-hmm. is so effective and it changes. What do you think?
Yeah, I just want to interject here another little piece of information that, you know, pheromones is basically like your hormones interacting and you experiencing the other person through one sense. But that can change depending on your hormones. So if you are interrupting your hormones, if you're taking synthetic hormones, if you are on the pill, it's being
what you're
documented.
Receptive to or what you're giving off?
Both.
Okay.
Wow. But it's been documented that women who are on the pill, who perceive their partner through their scent in a particular way, when they go off the pill, they can smell their partner completely differently.
Mm.
And so, and they've had like, yeah, wow. There's
that's
a
so
lot of stories where people have gone on and off the pill and had completely different responses to their partner who they are in love with, but
wow.
then. Like
good and bad, good and bad.
Think about
and
good
power.
And bad.
Wow. Think about the power of it. Like, if you ever had somebody
it's incredibly
walk by and
powerful.
You get a whiff
yes.
of something, and that sense memory takes
yes.
you back to a sexy moment in time. You're like,
or any
smell.
Moment in
like,
time, just in general, just yeah. smell, sense in general. Like my grandma's, you know, chocolate chip cookies. Yeah. You know, anything. They're so
and so interesting. What he was saying about a sensual experience first. I mean, that is so like.
Mm-hmm.
That would be that's so wrong for many people
so
and,
wrong.
And you know, right for others. But
and this is the thing with sex coaching though, this is like an interactive experience. So mm-hmm. there isn't like a one shot. There isn't a one way. There is no formula. It's particularly with sex coaching, which is what I love about it, is that you're interacting with your client. And so there's a feedback loop. And so you're not just prescribing something or something that you've learned from a book. It's like, okay, how can we make this the best ever? Where are you at? Where do you want to go? And like, so that's maybe one we didn't really ask him about his clientele and who he's coaching. Maybe that's who
I think I could guess kind of who his clientele is just from talking to him. I'm so glad that we have you with us, Leela. I think that women in general, and you connect with women in general. And I mean, I think out of the three of us, I'm probably the least comfortable with some of the conversations that we're having. And that was
definitely... You liked the boob sex thing, dude.
I mean, I will talk about it, but I'm not going to do that. And I just...
Doesn't that read very vulgar? Like, I'd like to...
yes. And, but he's a... I don't know. I was a little bit uncomfortable.
Well, there was a male perspective of sexual play.
Megan, I agree with you. Let's withhold from sex, but I'll take the pearl necklace, please. Like, I mean, that for me seems very like vulgar and way down the road. And I mean, I don't even know that. The thing is,
like, I wish the label of sex wasn't there, because if this was just cuddling, we just said cuddling and holding each other, you would be perceiving someone's pheromones. You'd be taking that in. You'd feel their touch. And all of that.
And same with the massage.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait a minute.
It doesn't have to be a warm-up. Could be the whole thing.
Let's just spend a moment on this. In our minds, I'll speak personally, when he was talking about sex with the boobs, I went to a very dirty, vulgar place, with the end result being the pearl necklace. I didn't imagine, which is quite honestly, he might have meant get into bed and have an intimate moment and cuddle and get the oil out and caress each other's body, attention on the breasts. I mean, maybe he meant that, and maybe our minds... This is why language is so fascinating to me, and why the different perspectives of all... But the girls are shaking their head. They're like, no, Brooke, you're first. That's why the different perspectives of talking about this is so fascinating on this podcast, because we all have different needs and different ideas and different
definitions
that society has put upon us that is the gauge of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. It's so interesting.
Also, you know where my head was going during that? I was trying to think, are my boobs big enough for that? And also, like, if they're not, what kind of position could I get into so that we can make it work? And then there was like this comedy of errors happening in my brain. I feel like it's like the X-rated version of a Seinfeld episode or something. I just don't know.
I wish everybody could have seen this episode, and because our face is like having a fully female curated like project here, and all women in this living room were all like, oh, wait,
you were
what?
About to fall out of your chair. I think I did, silent laughing.
I had to step away from the mic with my
When
laughter.
Was the last time you had boob sex?
I'm not really interested in that. And
I've heard of armpit sex, which I'm trying to visualize.
That's what I'm saying. Like one of those novel things that you just do because you're just trying it out. But it was like very early on in my exploration.
Boob sex?
Yeah.
It seems pretty adolescent.
It sounds very porno-ish.
Yeah. Wait, one thing he said though, I want to just, he quoted, and I really did like this. This really resonated with me. To invest in pleasure is what's really going to get you to where you want to be in a peak experience with someone, whatever that means. So if we can invest in that personally and in our relationship, I think that's when discovery starts and you know, pleasure will deepen.
He also said, cook up elaborate sexual dishes. I loved that because I think that's just a cool way of thinking about,
I like that.
Right? Like how we can put in a little bit of our own spice and figure out, you know,
the art of making a dish.
Well, if anybody wants to know more about Eric Amaranth, you can find out more at thesexlifecoach.com. And he's also working on prototypes for a pair of sex toys for men and women that are designed to be used individually or simultaneously. And so we're starting to hear more and more about that. In fact, Doc Johnson, when they were on, were speaking about some of their most popular sex toys that were meant to be used simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So that's all cool. So thesexlifecoach.com, it's all there for you.
All right, ladies, that was so much fun. Very informative. And so that's it for us today. But we would really, really love to hear all your questions and curiosities. So email us at ik@iheartradio.com and follow us on Intimate Knowledge Podcast on Instagram.
We really want to stay connected, so hope we hear from you soon, and we'll be back next week.
Subscribe to Intimate Knowledge on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.